Now on BBC Radio 4, to mark Remembrance Day, the first of three readings featuring extracts from the diaries of Edith Appleton. Edie, as she was better known, worked as a nurse during the Great War, and her diaries record many of the horrors of conflict, as well as some rare but welcome lighter moments. It's April 1915, and Edie is based just behind the front line at Casualty Clearing Station No. 3, near Ypres. Rachel Atkins is the reader.
April 18th. We have had over 600 through our hospital today, badly wounded and fearfully collapsed. Some who have been out since August say it is quite the worst time they have had. We went on duty at 5:30 a.m. and stayed on till 9 p.m. I missed tea and dinner because we were too busy in the theatre. It has been a sad day and a terribly tiring one. Amputation of arms and legs and insides cut and packed in. I'm very tired. April 20th. Frantic day from 7 a.m. to 10 p.m. One long rush of badly wounded being admitted. Officers and men, many so blown to bits that they just come in to die. The big ward is agonised groans and pleadings all the time, and we feel we don't know where to start for the hundreds of things to be done at once. Ypres is very much ruined and heaps of dead. English, French and Belgian are lying about in the square and all about the town. We hear the Germans have given up the hope of taking Ypres, so they have decided to utterly destroy it. April 28th. We were so much under fire on Saturday, Sunday and Monday that on Monday night we evacuated all but a few patients who were unfit to move, and we, nurses, were ordered to clear out in half an hour. We were packed off at about 11:30 p.m. for Saint-Omer. We had operations on at the time, and it was a little difficult for us all to go on as usual. After the first shock, we tried to become used to the 5-minutely explosions of a big shell close to us, but it was difficult, and my knees did shake. We arrived at Saint-Omer at 2 a.m. A party of 20 refugees were put up in a ward for the night, found stretchers and blankets all prepared for us. We hear today that the place is still being shelled, and that our unit, number 3CO, is being moved to Bailleul tomorrow, where we are to join it. So today, just for one day, after the fortnight of practically working night and day, we are having a rest. And at the time of writing, we are in a beautiful wood just outside Haasbrook, where we are going to have a picnic tea. It is very restful not to hear the roar of the gun so loud and near. May 2nd, Bailleul. We settled our wards and things today. We have one wing of a lunatic asylum, room enough to accommodate about 500 patients. Last night we were billeted in various parts of the town, and tonight we are sleeping at the asylum. Our rooms are tiny with high barred windows. Mine is minute, but has a pleasant outlook over the aviation ground. The news today was not cheerful, and from the roar of guns a big attack has been made. Let us only hope our men have done well. May 5th. Very busy day. 5 cases in theatre and wards full of gas poisoning cases. They're fearfully sad to see. The slight ones look rather like pneumonia, and the bad ones are terrible. The poor things are blue and gasping, lungs full of fluid and not able to cough it up. 6 have died of it in one ward alone today. I hear with sorrow that we have lost Hill 60 today, owing to our men being poisoned by gas. There is a good deal of firing going on tonight. If only we could do really well and make the Germans ask for peace. The lunatics in the asylum have been very noisy, yelling and screaming and stamping about. May 7th. Quietish day. Monsieur le Directeur has made us a great offer. We may use the lunatics' bathroom twice a week for 1 hour, which means 4 of us bathing at one time. There are 4 baths in one room. I don't fancy bathing in company, but as I have not sat in water deeper than 1 inch since last year, the temptation to go is great. May 8th. 3 of us went to another part of the asylum this morning at 7 and had a bath, deep, up to our necks in water. Glorious. The first time for months and months. May 9th. Looking out of my window tonight, I saw a fearful and wonderful sight. A clear, moonless, starlit night, a strong, cold wind. All along the ridge of hills which forms my horizon was a continual sparkle and flash of light and the loud roar of guns. These are the star signal light flashes from the guns and searchlights going continuously. Letter from mother telling me of the death of three officers and two men of the Buffs I knew quite well. The one I feel saddest about is Private Ernest Wanstall. He cleaned our boots when he was quite a tiny, grew big enough to take a place as chicken boy to a farmer's wife. Then he ran away and enlisted and came home a week later in his uniform. A funny little object, but the joy of his mother. She grew more and more proud of him as he filled out and was drilled into a fine, upright fellow. So he progressed and was always the same nice, shy boy, very devoted to all of us. Now he is shot dead, somewhere in France. May 16th. I could tell you many tales of our patients, but they are so thick on the ground it is hard to choose. One poor youngster was brought in yesterday, stone cold, no pulse, perfectly sensible and horribly badly wounded. He just loved all that was done for him, his warm, clean clothes and hot bottles and hot drinks, and pleaded not to be sent away with the others. I promised he shouldn't be. He smiled very sweetly and went happily to sleep, and never woke in this world. July 31st. Had the half-day off duty, having evacuated two of my six cases. I called for Miss Congleton and took tea onto Mont Noir. Sat in a lonely spot overlooking Ypres and had it. She got the Royal Red Cross for the Neuve Chapelle business and was telling me odd bits about it. The whole staff were worn out, the mortuary corporal included. One afternoon, he came to Miss C and asked her to help him sort them out. And when she got there, he threw off blanket after blanket from the poor dead things who'd been brought down in such numbers that some tickets were off. He said, "Did you ever see him before? Did you ever see him?" His one job was to sort out RCs and Church of England so that each padre might bury his own. Then he found a fresh difficulty over one whom he thought was an officer but had nothing to mark him. "And how am I to bury him? As officer or man?" Sister said, "Surely they all get buried the same." "No, they don't," said the bewildered corporal. "Men is hammered, officers is screwed." Poor sister, who was worn out as well as everyone else, suddenly went hysterical and laughed and laughed. The more she told herself it was tragic, the funnier it all looked. And the little white-faced corporal with hair on end just gazed helplessly at her. That is one of the truest pictures of overwork and undersleep. And perhaps it shocks you, but I have lived through much the same. August 28th. We had a lad of 18 in with a fractured skull this morning. 2 hours later, his brother came to see him. I was certain it would be an elder brother, but to my utter amazement, a small, unbroken-voiced, blue-eyed creature of about 15 was sent in. I asked him how old he was. He said, standing at salute, 18, regimentally. A poor little creature, not much older, was brought in, dying from a stomach wound. He only lived 1.5 hours. He asked me to write to his father and say it was all right, he didn't mind going. Then he said, "I have done my bit, but I didn't think I should die so young." September 14th. We hear that a big push is to be made this month and all along our lines. We three hospitals are putting up 50 marquees each to be prepared for a rush. September 22nd. Everything is as usual and quiet still. The town is closed and hundreds of troops are passing through on their way up. It is a sickening and heart-rending sight. These long columns of fine, healthy, cheery men marching so gaily to the music of drum and fife bands, and they must know, as we do, that a great many will not come back, and a great many more spoilt, heads smashed or short of a limb or something sad. 4:30 a.m. Things are beginning to stir. I can hear rifle fire in the distance when I'm at the window. I wonder where those poor creatures are, the hundreds of young ones unbaptized with fire, who went up yesterday. Braveness and good luck to them now. September 27th. Our First Army made a push yesterday. which started things going in the hospitals. We really served the Second Army, but we acted as overflow. All three of us were soon filled with the wounded. The news on the whole is good. We seem to have advanced a little and taken a great many prisoners. The wounded we have are not nearly so bad as those we had from Hill 60. The CO asked for my particulars at the office yesterday. I suppose it means a move soon. September 30th. No evacuation today, so we have the same family as last night. The man with most of his insides outside, who was so very ill all night, died during the day. And tonight another, shot in the lungs, is, I'm afraid, dying. Anyway, he is terribly ill. And the funny old daddy, who was kicked in the stomach by a horse, is also very sorry for himself, but I think he's doing quite well. A man in the ward was telling me tonight what an abject picture some Germans made who are giving themselves up. They looked not like men as they came across, shaking and trembling like leaves, shambling along, some with hands up, all more or less wounded, ragged and hungry. October 16th. We had a rather busier taking-in day. Some bad abdominals operated on and doing badly. The operation gives them their only chance, and that a slender one, when the intestine is like a badly damaged inner tube of a bicycle with tears and holes all along it. Major Ray took 15 inches from one man. October 29th. Our two abdominals died in the night. One was Lord George Sanger's son, such a charming man and so grateful for all that was done for him. I'm afraid the man wounded in the chest will die too. He's terribly ill. I took my lace pillow and sat beside him this afternoon. He liked it very much and hated me to move even to get things for him. At three, I made him a feeder of tea with brandy in. He said it was very good and wanted me to have some of it. I refused. He pressed and insisted and was making himself breathless over it, so I did drink some from the back of the feeder, which pleased him very much indeed. He's a very nice man, as most of them are. November the 1st, All Saints' Day. Pouring without ceasing all day. There was a service held in the soldiers' cemetery this afternoon for all our Tommies who were lying there. It was a simple little service, but I don't think one could forget it. The whole crowd of us standing there and singing and joining in the service in the pouring rain and thick mud, with the guns booming away to eastward of us, and these pathetic graves marked by a simple wooden cross. Just outside, in the ordinary town cemetery, crowds of French civilians stood watching. The chaplain gave a sensible address, not one to make the Tommies weep as they so easily do. He said we had come to rejoice over the loyalty and devotion of the men who had died, not to mourn over their death. And he felt sure if they could have had it otherwise, they wouldn't. And it was quite true that we faintly struggle, they in glory shine.